Welcome to the United Lodge of Theosophists here in Philadelphia. We'll open our meeting with a reading of our declaration and a presentation of our announcements. The policy of this lodge is independent devotion to the cause of theosophy without professing attachment to any theosophical organization. It is loyal to the great founders of the theosophical movement, but does not concern itself with dissensions or differences of individual opinion. The work it has on hand and the end it keeps in view are too absorbing and too lofty to leave it the time or inclination to take part in side issues. That work and that end is the dissemination of the fundamental principles of the philosophy of theosophy and the exemplification in practice of those principles through a truer realization of the self, a profounder conviction of universal brotherhood. It holds that the unassailable basis for union among theosophists, wherever and however situated, is similarity of aim, purpose, and teaching, and therefore has neither constitution, bylaws, nor officers, the sole bond between its associates being that basis. And it aims to disseminate this idea among theosophists in the furtherance of unity. It regards as theosophists all who are engaged in the true service of humanity, without distinction of race, creed, sex, condition, or organization. And it welcomes to its association all those who are in accord with its declared purposes and who desire to fit themselves, by study and otherwise, to be the better able to help and teach others. The true theosophist belongs to no cult or sect, yet belongs to each and all. In keeping with this declaration, which unites all the ULTs around the world with similarity of aim, purpose, and teaching, we here in Philadelphia have two weekly meetings on Sunday mornings from 11 to 12. We have a presentation of the teachings of theosophy in a more formal sense, either as a lecture, panel, or a forum, which is a shorter talk. This morning we're going to use the panel presentation, and our subject today, in keeping with the overall theme for the month of practical theosophy, is Seize the Day, Fashion Tomorrow. Next week the talk presentation will be on powerful thoughts, words, and deeds. All these thoughts, words, and deeds have their effect, but which ones are the most powerful? That would sure be useful for us to know. The building opens on Sundays at 10:30. On Wednesday evenings, we have a study class in the Ocean of Theosophy. We are currently approaching the end of the chapter on psychic forces and phenomena. And for this Wednesday, there will be consideration on the dangers and complexities of psychic forces, laws, and phenomena. The following Wednesday, we just want to mention, is a break from our normal Wednesday evening programs, and we are having a special annual meeting called ULT Day, which is actually a commemoration of the life and work of Robert Crosby, the principal founder of the United Lodge of Theosophists. In that meeting, There will be a bibliographical sketch of his life, some readings, and a talk on the mission of the United Lodge of Theosophists. In addition to these meetings, which are free and open to the public, we have a library. The library is available on from 5:15 to 7:15 on Wednesdays. Just before the Wednesday evening class, there's always a student there to help you find whatever information you're interested in on the philosophy. And also, if you wish, you can prepare by reading the assigned parts and reference for that evening's class. We also have a book table upon which are displayed straight line theosophical literature, books, pamphlets, magazines. These are available for examination and purchase before and after meetings and during library hours. The activities of this lodge, as said, are free and open to the public. The lodge is maintained entirely by voluntary contributions, time, service, and money, and all are welcome to participate as they see fit. There is no obligation imposed or implied. This morning, then, we are keeping in line with the general theme of practical theosophy. We'll have two panel presentations, two short talks, leaving plenty of time for your questions, comments, discussion. The first presentation will be on the idea, the phrase, seize the day. And the second one will be fashion tomorrow. How do we do that? Those two seemingly disconnected goals. How can we unite them? So we will begin with a consideration of seize the day. In the year 23 BC, the Roman poet and philosopher Horace wrote in his book of poems, Odes, the following. Ask not, 'tis forbidden knowledge, what are destined termed of years, mine and yours, nor scan the tables of your Babylonish seers. Better far to bear the future, my Lucanoi, like the past, whether Jove has many winters yet to give, or this our last. This that makes the Tyrrhene billows spend their strength against the shore. Share your wine and prove your wisdom. Life is short. Should hope for more? In the moment of our talking, envious time has ebbed away. Seize the day. Trust tomorrow, e'en as little as you may. This phrase, seize the day, or as we may also know it to be carpe diem, has echoed down through the centuries and has even taken hold in our modern society. This ancient Latin phrase has found new life in contemporary music, literature, movies, vacation resorts, and businesses, and everyday expression. But what did it mean to the Epicurean philosopher Horace? What does it mean for us today? And what does it mean in the light of practical theosophy? Obviously, the expression seize the day is an idiom. It is no more possible to seize the day than it is to seize the wind. Horace is saying, as the Epicurean philosopher, not to ignore the future, even though it is unseen and unknown to us in general. Rather, one should not leave things to chance or fate. Take action and do all that one can today to make one's future better. Enjoy the moment, be mindful of it, and make it important. For us today, as we are seemingly living in a much more complex, rapid-changing world, experiencing many physical and psychological crises, seize the day means that we should enjoy the present and live for today rather than allow our minds to be vexed by anxiety about the future or regret for the past. The future is uncertain for us. The past is unchangeable. All we know for sure is what our present circumstances are. All we can change is our present conditions. So approach the day with conviction and purpose. In the light of practical theosophy, seize the day means to make the most of today by making theosophical ideas powerful forces for good in our daily lives and achieving the most spiritual fulfillment we can from everyday life. Human beings and nature are both ever-present and ever-becoming realities in the present moment. The condition, present, and future of both are under the sway of karmic law. This is the essential message of the fundamental ideas of theosophy that make them so powerful and spiritually fulfilling in a practical sense every day. How does one seize the day in the light of theosophy? Living in the present, in the moment, is not an easy task, but it is the only time and place where we can act, where we can learn from the past, and where we can make a difference in the future. The present moment seems to have no real duration, for as soon as we say now, that present moment has become the past, and that which was the future has become the present now. From the perspective of time, the present moment is an illusion, since it is constantly changing and has no duration, even for a billionth of a second. The one and only reality that eternally was, is, and will be is absolute deity. The one and only unchanging reality in every moment in our lives is the ray of that absolute that wells up in our consciousness as the self. I am I. To live in that self is to live in the self of all and in the moment. The one unchanging reality, life and self, is closely related to the one enduring law that governs everything that changes in the world of manifested being. It is the law of karma, which simply means action or any cause that has a reaction or effect. There is not an event, condition, accident, or misfortune in our lives that could not be traced back to our own doing in this life or another, through the effects awakened into activity by our own actions. Human evolution and progress depends on self-induced and self-devised effort. These causes and their effects can only be initiated in the present, now, today. The causes that are initiated by our body, mind, and spirit, and they have their effect in our body, mind, and spirit. What are the actions of the body that we can perform now and seize the day? They are the right and proper and wise performance of our everyday duties, our duties to ourself, to our family, to our friends, to our community, nation, and humanity. What are the actions of mind that can be done today, now, so that we may seize the day? They are the one-pointed, concentrated use of our thought, will, and feeling in everything we do, making everything equally important and receiving each event with an equal-minded attitude. What are the actions of our spiritual nature that can be performed in the heart of our being now, today, in order to seize the day? They are living according to right devotion, to live and act for the benefit of others today, to study and work upon ourselves and upon our conditions today to make ourselves better able to help and teach others today. So with these ideas, we'll pause and give an opportunity for us to listen to how we can at the same time fashion tomorrow.
Well, it is today, and it's always today. We know that the future exists in the present, meaning that things do not just appear in our lives. It's really a continuation of prior thinking, acting, and doing. And we are constantly acting. We are constantly in motion, mentally and physically. Knowing this, that through our mind, our will, and our imagination, we are fashioning the future. Well, we are creating the future. We are creating the future in our present moment. And we'll carry on to future moments. So any effort put forward now will reap its benefits. But there is so much to know. There's so many, will I be doing the right thing? So many questions arise. We are told that we need to simply renounce, resign, renounce the benefits of our own actions. Not do things for its reward, but do it because that is what needs to be done. it was very well outlined that we are the ones who are in control. We are the ones that are doing this. So we are the titans of our own universe, because our thoughts, our words, and our deeds create this future. So by being equal-minded and by taking a position of non-attachment, and by seeing things from not so much a personal point of view, but a universal point of view, and seeing things that we exist as a unity, and what we are distracted with are our differences, and what we need to concentrate is in our similarities. That each and every one of us has the potential to be an adept. We each have the potential to be godlike in our character. But if we wish to help and serve humanity, we must become disciplined. We must take control of our lives. And we do that simply by renouncing our lower desires and not giving them value as we have for most of our life. They have value, but we have to eliminate that personal idea of value for me and for me alone. Because in reality, we affect everyone. Everyone. By our thoughts, our words, and our deeds. We are dynamic beings. We are the generators of force. And knowing that, we become very responsible. Or we need to become very responsible. Because the reality is we're not living for today. We're not coming here to make next week better, which we have in mind, but we're working for the future. We're working for the future of humanity. With the understanding of karma and reincarnation, and understanding that everything we think, say, and do reverberates. It has an effect, for it's a cause. We fashion our own future. But we are aided by these great truths, by those beings that are behind the scene, who have renounced the rewards from their labor and have dedicated themselves and sacrificed themselves for humanity. So we always keep in mind that in our higher nature, we are a reflection of these perfected beings. Our problem or our challenge is to deal with this lower being, this animal man, that he can become the servant of the higher. But it takes will and sacrifice and imagination to realize that these truths that we are finding in theosophy are the reigniting of understandings that we've had before, that we know are true. And our mission is now to prepare the way for future generations so that these ideas will join us in a humanity it's pointed out that the aid that we receive comes from higher orders of intelligences, that we are ever moving to a greater understanding of our spiritual nature. It's processes going on. And in the last, or in the 1800s, this philosophy came forward, this science came forward, and it began giving our world a new language, or the beginnings of the development of a new language, of understanding, of abstract, archaic, philosophical ideas that only the subtle-sighted can see. But what was given us are the tools of which we can develop these powers, these abilities, this initiation into this ancient wisdom, which is our birthright. And it's been given to us like it has never been given to us before. We have it in writing. We must become in love with truth and search for it for wherever it can be found. So, live for tomorrow. We are fashioning it by today. If you have questions, and if you don't have questions,
make a statement.
Yes.
The other statement, we must become involved. Well, are we not subconsciously involved already?
We would certainly say yes, and we would certainly think so, that we are unconsciously involved in all of life. We're involved in other planes of existence, but we are not conscious of it. We are a septenary being. We have seven states of consciousness. What state are we conscious of right now? Only this material world. But in dreaming, it's other states of consciousness. Meditation, other states. So we are aware that there are other realms of matter that we do not see and we do not recognize, but exist right here.
Yes, become involved, but don't plan to become involved tomorrow or next week, or maybe wait till next December 31st to make a new resolution. Because the only time you can really become involved is today. Because you're already involved today. You're already a thinking, feeling, reacting, willing being today. The point is to become involved today with the perspective of that which is timeless, eternal. Whether we call it the truth about ourselves, the truth about nature, divine wisdom, spiritual knowledge, to become involved with each passing moment from that eternal perspective.
Yes.
There's two old sayings that were very popular back in the day, as they say. And they are, live for today and be here now. Are they the same or are they different? And if so, how different?
Any words that we hear mean something to us in particular. So be here now. Seize the day. You know, our understanding interprets these words and these feelings and these expressions. So what do we think it means? To each one of us, it means something.
So every generation has its own way of expressing be here now, live for today. So it was not Horace who invented the idea. He came up with an expression suitable to the times, which just happens to have a life of its own today. But a few Saturdays ago, we learned of the Epic of Gilgamesh, recorded on tablets thousands of years ago. And at some point in his life, having lost his best friend, he was profoundly grieving and wandering, looking for answers to life. And he came across what we would call today a sympathetic bartender, who listened to his story, said, "You know, you gotta let it all go and focus on today. Put all these things aside and try to be happy with what you have now." Same idea, different way of saying it, but an eternal truth. Eternally relevant to the human condition. Yes?
You brought up a point with this idea of consciousness. And we were wondering, when we go to sleep at night and we go through into dreams, there is a definite consciousness there. And yet, the physical body and everything within it is in a sleeping mode, shall we say. So that idea of consciousness, we're never not conscious, are we?
No. We are conscious beings. Like when we dream, we see things in our dreams. Well, that's the matter of that state of consciousness. We don't see it now when we're awake, but we see it when we're asleep. Now, it's a state of consciousness. It's a state of matter that is in coadjunition but not in consubstantiality. That means it's on an interlocking plane, but it's not of the same substance. Everything has its own state of consciousness. And until we have gained control over this, can we hope to gain control or even sight in the others?
So dreams are sometimes thought to be fanciful, chaotic, subjective. Sometimes they have wisdom. Sometimes they teach us. But the one reality we can take from dreams is that there is also the dreamer. Who or what is the dreamer, the observer of the wisdom or the chaos or the fancy that is experienced in dreams? It is the same enduring ego, thinker, spiritual being who is awake now, in this moment. Same thinker experiencing on a different plane and state of consciousness. Yes?
In these rooms, a strange statement. The right perception of existing things, the knowledge of the non-existing. When we hear these phrases, living
just repeat your question. What does the expression, the right perception of existing things,
is the knowledge.
And the knowledge of the non-existent?
Also?
No, you don't.
Well, why don't I take one and you take the other, okay?
We'll start with the right knowledge of existing things. The right knowledge of existing things is that they are temporary. They are not permanent. They are real to us in the moment, but their enduring reality is an illusion. And that's what life teaches us. We read it in a book, we hear it lectured, but until we experience personally, we don't really understand it. We don't really have it as wisdom. But that which we hold on to the most, that which we cherish the most, that which we fear the most, that which we hate the most, that which we invest so much of our inner energy in, is basically here today and gone tomorrow. The right perception depends on having an awareness of the non-existent, that which does not manifest, but is eternal. Want to say anything else?
No, I think that's okay.
Well, there was a question in the back before.
Well, it's just one can take these ideas seriously, begin to apply them, and everything in the world seems to go wrong. Why?
Well, it's very simple. It's very simple. How we think has a great bearing in who we are. And we are electromagnetic beings. And our thoughts have electromagnetic powers. And once we call upon these truths, these ideas, things seem to hurry up. Our reality becomes more acute. Because with the idea of reincarnation and karma, and just the unity of life, we begin to realize that what comes to us belongs to us. And whether it be good, bad, or indifferent, we're the ones who assign a value to it. But the day we do not assign a value to it and just simply say, another opportunity. What does it mean? What is the universe telling me?
So the right perception of existing things means that we realize, even though all these experiences and conditions are temporary, they are our lessons. They are the schools. Without them, we could not learn, and we are here to learn. So today, one of us may decide we're going to go on a diet. Or maybe one of us decide we're going to go to the gym. Or one of us might decide that we're going to read more, or study more, or work harder. And tomorrow, all sorts of challenges seem to come up, or as said, things seem to get worse. Well, you go to the gym, you're not looking for light weights if you expect to grow muscles. And if you're trying to go on a diet, you sort of know there's going to be temptations and you're going to have to make choice. So the experience of things seemingly worse is a test of our will, our determination, our commitment, and how much we really believe in what we want to achieve and how much effort. Well, that's how we learn about ourselves. And if we fail, we just pick ourselves up and try again, because that's all we can do if we're going to hold on to our conviction.
We find it interesting, you know, theosophy. I think we've read that HPB talks about this, about how when we decide to do something new or different or to improve something, that, you know, karma just sets sets up some blocks just to teach us a lesson. And that's all interesting and occult and esoteric, but really anybody who in their lives has routinely set goals and accomplished things, Murphy's Law is reality, and they know. And they expect it, and if you're going to do it, just wait to get hit from all sides, and do it anyway. And people who don't accomplish what they're trying to accomplish.
Yes. It's been our experience that even people who don't try get hit from all sides. The difference is what we're going to do when we're hit from all sides. Are we going to sit back and complain and blame this person and that person and be the victim, fall into depression, fall into anxiety, submit to the will of another? What are we going to do when we're hit from some all sides? Well, with a true understanding of ourselves, we can take the position of the warrior soul. And that's the lesson of the Bhagavad Gita, to perform one's duty in the face of all obstacles, because that's what we're here to do, to raise nature, to lift it up, which is a struggle, but also to improve our own condition and nature, which is a struggle. In the back, yes.
We think a big part of the problem is when it comes to dieting or studying or learning math, we know what to expect. And when someone says, well, I'm going to make an effort on this spiritual path, there is an assumption that because it's spiritual, it isn't the same. And all we have to have is the desire, and we should be more spiritual just because of that. So we think it takes more studying of what the spiritual is versus what our personal behavior and thinking is.
Well, it's stated in the Secret Doctrine that Sanskrit will again become the language of the people. Because we are evolving, we are becoming able to express other ideas other than materialistic. And we have, the English has no words that are sufficient to express these different states of consciousness. Let alone, you know, an exposition on understanding them. So, language is an important factor for us to convey to each other these ideas, and we are told that Sanskrit will again be the language that is communicated amongst us. You had a question? Oh, sorry.
Yes, this is
So I wonder. It seems that right now the conversation is mostly orbiting around personal challenges and things that come up through karma as obstacles to self-improvement, studying, dieting, fitness. But I wonder how we focus on seizing the day through or against obstacles to general social well-being and humanistic well-being, against human adversary or capitalist or corporational adversaries.
Well, it's a very noble thing to try to improve the conditions of humanity, overcoming, knocking down the obstacles that get in the way of the highest potential of humanity. Because as long as there is that obstacle, then it is an obstacle to us as well. We're all connected. And if we live in a community or an environment or a culture where the obstacle exists, it is likely, under an understanding of karma and reincarnation, that we have something to do with its presence now, what we did or didn't do in the past. The challenge and the opportunity is, and why we're focusing on living for today, is that changes in society cannot happen overnight. But changes in ourselves can. And the more we change ourselves, and the more we, by our own example and sharing of what we know, inspire others to change themselves collectively, that change in humanity comes about more quicker. So the whole object of the Theosophical movement, which distinguishes it publicly from the efforts made in the past, is the goal in modern times, as said and established in 1875, to take these ideas but to generate a nucleus of universal brotherhood. Not that this individual or that individual will go and try to seek this wisdom under a master or some teacher or disciple, but that collectively people from all different nations and races and situations work together with an understanding of their spiritual identity to achieve the very goals suggested.
And it all comes down, we will find, to the ideas that we hold to be true. We're in the problem, or we have the problems that we have now, are because of the false ideas that we have held on to. And this idea of separateness. So, knowing that, one needs to have compassion for those that are blind and ignorant. But the only thing that we can do is to foster these ideas in our life and with the life around us. We can only do what we have in front of us, and that's us. And if we have conquered but one flaw in our character, or one habit that was detrimental, we have conquered the world. And not, we do not ignore the outside world. The day we can control the inner world, we have truly accomplished something.
How's this? Accept the past, act today, anticipate tomorrow.
Are you making these up?
No. I mean, yes.
Could you repeat that?
Yeah.
Accept the past, act today, anticipate tomorrow.
What should we accept from the past? What should we anticipate for the future? There's the rub. What can we take, since we cannot act in the past, we can only act today, as your phrase suggests. What should we accept from our past experience? Yes?
Well, just like it says in the Bhagavad Gita about doing your duty as it comes to you, your duty has been fashioned by what you have done in past lives. So by understanding that and accepting that what is coming to you, you have fashioned. So we have to accept the fact that these are the lessons that we have to learn because it's something that we've not taken care of in the past.
And it's something that is not someone else's fault. Okay? So the idea of how we are living now and what is going on, we can't blame anyone.
So the devotional book says, look not behind or thou art lost. So we can accept the past, we can learn from the past. And what is the expression? Person and has not learned from the past is doomed to repeat it, or at least repeat the error. So we can accept the lesson, and as you're suggesting, if we find ourselves in a difficult situation, we take ownership of it and realize that we've created that condition. So what does it mean to anticipate the future? Because as said, the Bhagavad Gita tells us not to act for the hope of reward. And it is the easiest thing in the world to anticipate future reward or benefit. So what is it we are to anticipate in the future, or from the future, from what we act on today?
Well, that the result will be based on our motive and action in dealing with the issue.
Yes.
What does it mean to have an equal mind?
We'll come back to that, but just in case there were some more contributions on anticipating, but we'll come back to that. Yes.
Well, do you not act in hope of reward? But a lot of your actions are going to bring things back to you. So, you know, so the next issue there is, okay, so what are you doing with what you have? If there were things that came back that you can use for good, where you can be selfish with. So, for instance, some people would say, oh, big corporations, they make profit. That's bad. It hurts humanity. Some people would even say that a profitable corporation is practicing black magic. But what does an individual do with the intelligence or the wealth or the farm products that he has sown seed for and is reaping? Well, if he uses that abundance to be of service and sell it and continue to keep it circulating and cycling, that's really the question. Not plant seeds and don't worry about it, but plant seeds and when it comes back, what are you going to do with it?
Any other thoughts on how to anticipate the future? Yes?
Well, this may help. What we found interesting is that statement, independent devotion to the cause. And this thing to what takes place here, we noticed there's certain sharp, reasonable, logical statements being made, like resist not evil. And most of us are not. Sufficient to the day is the evil. As you stop and think, what does it mean? Resist not. If we see something evil, naturally we want to fight back. The Asapa is teaching us how to approach the things that happen daily in our lives that we don't like or that make us put up our fists.
So anticipating the future and acting for today, to combine those two, acting for the day does not mean to act impulsively or to want everything now, to sacrifice discretion, sacrifice resources only because you want something now today and you want to act on it today. But as was suggested, to realize that every action has an effect, and to be mindful that within our acts today lies the germ of the future effect, just as when we plant a seed, we anticipate that a certain kind of flower or species will grow from that, and we're not expecting a pine cone. So everything we do today is like planting that seed. And we should be anticipating what will come from that, from the kind of soil we plant it in, and the conditions, and what it will bring forth in the future. So to go to your question about what does it mean to be equal-minded? Any thoughts on that?
Well, just do you read? Do you drive a car? Do you walk? Some things that we do, we don't realize how equal-minded we need to be. But we can take that a step further and be single-minded morally. single-minded in our concentration. So that idea of being single-minded is really focus. What are we focused on? And we are single-minded a lot during the day. It's just that, can we prolong that focus? An adept can. They can extend it for as long as they wish.
Another thought on equal-mindedness?
Yes. Paraphrase Mr. Judge. We go around labeling everything. I like this. I don't like that. We have to use Mr. Judge's advice. Label it. I must need this.
We think that the biggest obstacle for seizing the day is our failure to be equal-minded. Because how can you act today if you're worried about what's going to happen in the future, or what other people might say in the future, what's going to happen to your future, or what you did in the past? How can you, all that freezes you because you're not equal-minded, you're not calm, you're not patient, you're not taking the perspective of the thinker, you're not taking the perspective of wisdom that you've learned. So equal-minded means that we approach all situations with the same wisdom perspective and act in the moment from that basis, because without it, we can't. Our present actions are chained to the past or future. We're not free, we're not equal.
Yes.
Would another way of it be saying what is, is? You can't change what is, it is. And so being equal-minded, you can see what it is and respond.
Another modern idiom, it is what it is.
think
of.
Yes, and that's how best we can deal with any situation. You know, not bring our emotions into it, but just look at it objectively, with no bias, no preconceived notions, but look at it for the reality that it is, not how I feel about this reality, but what is this reality?
An interesting dilemma. We don't want to bring our emotions into it, what we feel about it, but we have to bring our feeling into it. So how do you bring your feeling into something without carrying your emotional attachments to it? It needs to be done by cultivating a feeling that is above our personal feelings. And that feeling, we know, is love, charity, compassion that we can express in every moment, in every condition, and begin to practice in every circumstance in which we have contact with another human being.
Well, we're finding we've come to the end of our hour, but we would like to remind you that what you see taking place here is done on a voluntary basis, as it was stated in our declaration, through independent devotion. And we come to serve. So everyone here is invited to take up this service. We have free and open meetings, and all students contribute a portion of their life to this room and to these ideas. So takes place in time, service, and money. Building is very beautiful, but very old. So all the assistance that we can muster is appreciated. Meeting adjourned.
Good job. Thank you.